Hello and welcome to this episode of the Albion Obsessed. And this is a live stream where we're going to talk about the preseason series that has been happening in the good old US of A. We're going to start by talking about the Chelsea game. But before we get into that, let's see who we've got on the show tonight. We welcome Joe. Joe, my friend, how are you?
I'm losing my voice. So, well, I've already lost my voice like two days ago. But if I lose my voice halfway through this, you're going to have to sort of carry me through. Hi, Dagan.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late.
No, you're all good, mate.
It's all good. I've had technical issues, so it's all fine. So apologies if Joe loses his voice. Apologies if I cut out. That's my bad. We welcome Dagan. Dagan, my friend, how are you?
Doing well. Back from Philly, soon to Atlanta.
Exciting times stateside. We're going to dive into that story of Dagan's first Brighton Hove Albion game very, very shortly.
Albion.
Yeah, the Albion. The stadium announcer, just if you're not sure about that. And we're going to also talk to Aaron. Aaron, my friend, great to have you back on the pod. How are you keeping?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well. Happy to be back. It's been a while. We're happy to be back, that's for sure.
Yep, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. And guys, as ever, because this is a live stream, drop your thoughts and comments in the comment section down below. Thank you, Daniel, for rating the jersey. Sony has already told me that she is not a fan of my Mets jersey. But, you know, Brighton, they did the jersey thing and Matoma was there and it was great. So I thought, you know what? Let's do it. So, Aaron, I'm going to start with you, my friend. Playing stateside against Chelsea, bit different from playing the likes of Lewis and Burgess Hill Town and Worthing that we've seen in yesteryear. How just mental is it that we are playing our pre-season games stateside?
Yeah, it's nuts. I think it also just shows how well we're doing as a football club in general. That the fact we can actually go out to the States and have a fantastic following out there, then that just speaks some volumes into me. And yeah, it's nuts to thinking, you know, I saw on my Facebook memories the other day that like 12 years ago we were playing Crewe Town away in a friendly. And like, you know, now we're playing the States, we got two more games to go. And yeah, it's nuts. It's crazy to me. Crazy.
Yeah, it really is a far throw, you know, away from the Broadfield Stadium when, you know, you're playing the likes of, no offence to them, Glenn Ray, Ben White. I think that was a game where, is it Dale Stevens or Liam Bridcut had a shot and it hit the bar and it was like one of the most like, oh my God, moments. But yeah, we digress talking about Crawley Town.
Good times.
I'm less interested in Crawley Town and more interested in you, Dagan, because you got to see your first Brighton and Hove Albion game in the flesh at the weekend. You drove a ridiculous amount of miles. You drove a ridiculous amount of hours to do that. So let's talk about your car journey first. Because we were talking about this off air. Give us a context. How long was your journey from where you were to where you were going in Philly?
So I'll start where it began, which is my daughter, who was recently 11, had her championship swim meet the morning of Saturday. She did very well, for those who are inclined to know. And the meet ran a little long. I was hoping it would be over by 1, and I expected a 4-hour-ish journey to Philly. And my father-in-law said to me, you might want to get on the road early. Traffic looks bad. And he was right, because it was showing about a five and a half hour journey. So the meet did it at 1. It ended at 1:30. I got on the road, and everything that seemed to be able to go wrong went wrong. I think I rerouted 6 or 7 times where, you know, Google tells you, hey, there's a faster route. Then I would turn and go, and things were looking good, and I was gaining time, and I was up to you guys throughout the travel. And then the time would tick back up, and, you know, at one point it looked like kickoff. It looked 30 minutes before kickoff. I thought I was going to be okay. And then as I got to Philadelphia, the traffic all but ground to a halt. I have not yet posted fun pictures of crossing through all of the states. But I took a much less direct route that took me you know, around through Delaware and into New Jersey, into Philadelphia that way. Needless to say, during kickoff, I think I had maybe just parked the car and made it in at about the eighth minute, in time to see our game opening goal, much to my delight. But it was as I was, you know, hearing the updates about Sony, you know, meeting Paul Barber and Glenn Murray, as I was stuck in traffic, I was like, no, I should be there. But it was a blast, and I got to meet a ton of great people. And I'm really excited to get to Atlanta to meet many, many more. But the experience of watching the team in and of itself was awesome. And I certainly have some takeaways from that.
Amazing. And we are going to get into those takeaways in just a little while. Good evening, Curtis. It is lovely to hear from you there. And hello, everyone else that is joining us on this live stream. As we go through, guys, drop your thoughts in the comments down below, because we're going to be talking about Joe. Are pretty decent friends now. You know, we're pretty friendly with them at Chelsea. You know, no bad blood between the fan bases. You know, nothing really going on behind the scenes there at all. So, you know, a proper nice little friendly between the two sides, wasn't it?
Yeah. Great to see them again. Great to hear from their fans. Great to see how happy Colwill was. Great to see that Caicedo wasn't in the squad. Oh my God, he wasn't in the squad. He trained for 2 days. That's why he's not on the way to Stamford Bridge. So you can get that out of your heads.
Hey, Joe, no, I'm going to interrupt you there, Joe, because Moises Caicedo made a double pinky promise with Roberto De Zerbi that he could leave if the club got an offer of £20 and a packet of Monster Munch.
Yes, because it is Roberto De Zerbi's decision whether the club accept a bid or not. Roberto De Zerbi has since said,
yeah,
that is utter bull. Meh. Yeah. Stop it.
It certainly is. We did talk about Chelsea quite a bit in a previous episode we did, so I don't want to rehash old stuff, as it were, but I think we can't really ignore, Aaron, the sort of bad blood between the two clubs. I think there's only one word for it, the obsession with Brighton and Hove Albion from the Chelsea fans. Every Andy Naylor tweet, every Brian Owen tweet, every Argus tweet, every Brighton Bubble tweet, every tweet that has got anything to do with Brighton, you can almost guarantee there is going to be some butthurt Chelsea fan going, give us Caicedo, stop holding Caicedo to ransom. And I want to put it out there, I know that that's not like a genuine like picture of their fan base, but my God, Aaron, on Twitter, these people, they're driving me absolutely nuts. What have you made of the Chelsea, I'm going to use fan in these inverted commas. What have you made of all this furore about Colwill and Caicedo?
It's a bit of a joke, really, isn't it? Let's be real. I mean, it's not hard to understand. Even though they are simpletons, you know, they've only been supporting the club for maybe 2-3 years and don't understand how it actually works. Because, you know, you want to support Chelsea when they're good and when they have money. If you pay the money we ask, you get the player. It's not hard to understand that. It's simple facts. That's something I don't get. You know, we've said it before, 100 mil is the our asking price. Nah, mate, we're off for 70. Right, okay, that's going to... No, please leave. Nah, it's fine, we'll offer 80. Okay, again, no. Well, we want Colwill then, and we'll talk. I know he's up for sale. And then Chelsea fans go up in arms. Oh, he doesn't want to join your small club, blah, 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 blah. He does. He wants to be a seagull. He wants to play for us, it's clear. And the fact of the matter is you have a player who doesn't want to be there, where Moises will happily continue to play here. You know, and to be honest, I think we're happy for him to go if we get the money. It's as simple as pay the money, get the player. And their fan base is just full of cretins. It really is. It's, like I said, every tweet, constant. Oh, free Moises, free Caicedo, free this, free that. Your comments are going to make absolutely no blind, literally no difference to the situation whatsoever. Like, just, I don't get it. I don't get the obsession. you've ripped our club apart once already. You took our player of the year last year, and that's more for you because it was awful for you, and so it was Potter for that fact. But don't expect us to come here and get rolled over by you lot. Oh, you should accept, you know, we're a bigger club than you, blah, blah, blah. You've not won anything major in your history. Yeah, and you finished 12th. You spent £600 million, you finished 12th. Congratulations, well done. I don't really get it. I don't get it. I don't get the obsession with them. Their club is an actual joke. They're throwing money at a problem that the fact is they can't score goals, but yet they will sign six or seven players for £100 odd million to as a defensive midfielders. You've got Mudrick, who's absolutely pony. Oh, well done. He scored a really good goal against us. Yeah, congratulations. You're playing fucking Pascal Grosso, fucking centre half. It's like, what do you expect? It's like, the guy's a midfielder. Let alone a freaking right back, let alone a centre back. Like, I don't get why they big their players up so much. They're not that good. You are not that good anymore. Just get it into your head. Oh, well, you beat 4-3. Congratulations. Well done. You beat our B team. Smashing. Good job. Well done. Yet you still conceded three goals against us with our B team. And we still look better than you. Like, it just baffles me. The club just baffled me. And I have friends who are Chelsea fans, and they just confuse me. They baffle me. They baffle me.
Very, very good, Adam. Aaron, it's...
Who the fuck is Adam? put the rocker away, boy. You've had too much.
When did we have Adam Lallana on the podcast?
It was when you weren't here, Joe.
Come on.
Yeah, Aaron spitting facts there. Obviously, like Maxwell, we know you're in the chat and you know you're watching. We are a big fan of our chat that we had last week. You are a gentleman and a scholar, and you were putting, you know, you are very good, a well-balanced argument out there for the Chelsea fans. Unfortunately, some of your fellow Chelsea fans haven't done the same. But obviously, as I said, that isn't a true indication of what all Chelsea fans are like. Let's be objective and diplomatic here. But seriously, if I have one dead brain Chelsea fan saying you haven't won a trophy, I am just going to bitch slap them back to plastic hell, because God damn it, just pipe down.
I think I'm going to have to click the explicit button for this podcast.
There's one thing I want to add, though. Is they come across like they're such a well-run club. You're not. You are cheating the system to start with, signing players on 8-year deals, which were not even a thing last year or 18 months ago. You spent £600 million on bang average players, and yet you somehow think you're a good, well-run club. You're not. You are money. That's all your football club is. You are money. At least we've built foundations and actually play good, attractive football, where you relied on Potter and Fat Frank to get you out of something. And the fact you thought Lampard was an upgrade to Potter says a lot. Says a lot about the fan base, some of the fan base in general. That's all I've got to say on that.
Thank you, Aaron, for your candidness. As ever, we are here for it. We absolutely love it. Let's talk, I suppose, less about Chelsea, even though we kind of have to talk about Chelsea, and more about the game then. Now, I'm not going to, normally when we do like a post-match chat, we kind of like go through it like proper analytically. I'm not going to do that today, simply because, well, not in the same style I would normally would, simply because it was a pre-season friendly. And I said this on the group chat beforehand, I think it's a pre-season game. I know it's in the States and it's against, you know, Premier League opposition. And it's a big thing. It was a big thing for the likes of, you know, our American fan base to get out there and to see the club if they haven't done so already. That's what that game was about. It was about that. And in terms of the footballing style, it was about getting minutes in legs, minutes in lungs, getting, you know, players back up to sharpness and trying a few things out. So I'm not overly that bothered about the result, if I'm being brutally honest. And because it was a pre-season game, let's talk about then the lineup, Joe. Because we knew that we would see some changes. We knew that we would see, you know, players playing in different positions. But I think what definitely caught my eye, Joe, was the fact that we started the game with only two defenders on the pitch, with young Jack Hinshelwood having to play at right back and Pascal Gross having to play at left back, and centre backs Jan Paul van Hecker and Adam Webster being the only recognised defenders on the pitch. But otherwise, it was a, you know, a pretty decent turnout. It was nice to see Adam Lallana return. Nice to see Solly March return. Mahmoud Dahoud also, you know, in the starting 11. So, you know, what did you make of, like, sort of the starting 11? Were you excited to see some new faces as well as some old faces returning?
I thought it was there or thereabouts, considering obviously it's pre-season. I've seen a few fans sort of taking this a little bit too seriously, and you're right, Tom, it's preparation. It's a chance for Roberto De Zerbi to look at these players and find out who he wants in his sort of cut-down Premier League squad, and who he wants in and around the squad for the Europa League as well, because it's no secret that we're going to need more squad depth. And I was delighted to see Jack Hinshelwood on the pitch. Obviously, he made his full appearance against Aston Villa at the end of the season. And Roberto De Zerbi clearly sees something in him. Adam Lallana has also spoken really highly of the lad as well. And that's two people that I trust their judgment fully. And if he's good enough by their books, I hope to see more of him this season. And I hope that it can be his breakout season. Great to see that he could play in those versatile positions of right back, left back, wherever you need him. I think he played midfield for us against Aston Villa. So yeah, really good to see him. Great to see Mo Dahoud for the first time. Thought he was really tidy and showed that he's more than capable of playing at the highest level possible. And yeah, just great, as you say, great to see Adam Lallana back. It's no secret what he gives us on the pitch when he's there. There was a moment in the first half where him and Danny Welbeck were sort of leading the press, and we won the ball from the press, and he was applauding it like you wouldn't believe. And the commentator pointed out, you need a mirror image of your manager on the pitch, and that's what Adam Lallana is for me. He's that leader. And Solly March, we all know how I feel about Solly March, so great to see that he's fit and ready to start the season.
Yeah, really nice to see Solly and Adam back. You know, I forget how much I miss Adam Lallana when he's, you know, not around. I know he's still a big part of the touchline, and he's always on there giving the support to the guys on the pitch. But having him actually on the pitch was really great to see. Dagan, you know, you were there in the flesh. I know you arrived a little bit after kickoff. What did you make of, you know, seeing Brighton for the first time in the flesh? You said something to me when we chatted on the phone on Sunday morning about how it was different from seeing it live to seeing it on the TV.
So my, you know, I was in the Brighton supporter section directly behind Steele, and playing out from the back on television looks harrowing, but watching it from directly behind the goalkeeper, it's abjectly terrifying. Like, cause you see how minute the difference is between, you know, total disaster and going the other way. And the quickness of the guys approaching, the pressure from the defense is incredible. And the other thing that's incredible is the pace of the ball. I cannot convey enough to anyone who's not watched this level in person, but I went, you know, I went to a USL Richmond Kickers game last week, and the speed of the ball moving from pass to pass, player to player, it's an entirely different sport than sort of soccer as we would know it here. Just so, so crisp. The passing around the back, the tight turns and spaces. And to that effect, my big takeaway from that first group, Gilmore and Dahoud were phenomenal. And I thought really controlled the game, created opportunities, won the ball back, did everything you'd want to do. We did not perform as well once the ball, you know, got near our goal in any part of the game. But those guys, I thought, did a phenomenal job in the middle of the field and you know, certainly looked the part of regular starters. And I think that's what De Zerbi's getting at here, right, is who can be one of those regular starters, because we need about two teams worth of guys who can be regular starters. I think it remains to be seen whether Hinzelwood will be one of those guys or not, but he gave him a shot at a spot where we right now don't have, you know, a surefire lockdown. This guy has to be in that spot. I think we know Purvis is going to play left back, you know, when he's healthy as much as possible. But we don't have that sense on the right side. So it makes sense to try guys out there. I'd still like us to have a right back, but I'm sure we'll talk about transfers later. But that was my big takeaway in person, was just like, that like gasping and terror that I hear from the crowd on the television. I'm like, what are they so worried about? They're like, that's fine. It didn't look that bad. That didn't look that close. And in person, it looks terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's watching Jason Steele kick it around the back is a harrowing experience, but it often works. Jason, I have zero doubts our team for the new season. This is an exceptional group of lads with the experience of the older guys. Blimey, we will be up there. Mark my words. Aaron, some high confidence there from Jason. I know we're so early into preseason. There are still a lot more potential signings to come. We still haven't seen the likes of Milner. Purvis hasn't returned. Caicedo hasn't returned yet. We've only seen a little bit of the Hood. We've only seen a little bit of Bart Verbruggen. You know, early days, but some exciting stuff happening on the pitch on the weekend.
Yeah, very much so. I think, like you said, it's the first game of pre-season. You really wouldn't expect the performance levels to be that high. And the style of play, I thought, was superb at times. You know, and I no doubt you get onto him later on, but I'm really excited to see how João Pedro is going to turn out. Like, he looked electric when he came on, and he seemed like a player I didn't realise we were missing until Saturday or Sunday morning. Like, he's very direct, very quick, very good with the ball at his feet. You know, he could be your front three. I know Joe's probably not going to like this, of Ferguson, Matoma and him. I think it could potentially be our starting front three next year, in my opinion. Still plenty of time to go in the transfer window. I think our transfer window obviously is going to be really dependent on the whole Moises situation. If he goes, I think it's more of an if than a when at the moment, then we're £100 million richer. Or we're richer and another centre-half added to the squad, can only be a good thing. Can only be a good thing, in my opinion. Would you like to keep Caicedo? Yeah, of course you would. He's a fantastic player. Let's not beat around the bush. He's probably one of the best players in our squad. But we've set our price, reached a price. Like I said, you can have the player. But then we've got, you know, so many players to come in who could potentially be really, really good. And I think the one I'm looking forward to seeing the most is the new keeper. I can't pronounce his surname yet, but Bart, I will call him Bart. He, you know, people were criticising him already. I was thinking, why? I was thinking, Christ, I was like, this, you know, the Mudryk goal he couldn't do nothing about to start with. And Gallagher's goal was the most scrappiest piece of football I've seen in about 2 years. And it's just ping-balling everywhere. Like, he couldn't do anything. You know, give him time and he will be our number one for sure. Will he be number one start of the season? We'll have to wait and see how preseason goes for that. But he's got so many good attributes for a young kid. You know, the fact his frame, his body itself, he's a big guy for a keeper, and that's what we need. That's what we need. His shot stopping is fantastic. His handling is fantastic. He is the modern day goalkeeper. In fact, he's good with the ball at his feet. Where you look like sort of look at the likes of maybe sort of De Gea and, you know, the older generation of goalkeepers, they're not as good as with the ball at their feet. They're not. It's just plain as day. You can see that. And that's one of the main things you have to be as a goalkeeper nowadays, is you're basically a midfielder who can use his hands. That's basically a make save. That's how I look at it at the moment. And it's exciting times, mate. Really exciting. And this year, you know, it's so early to predict. I'm just hoping just for a good run in Europe, really, for me. And then we'll see where we go from there.
I like it. It is looking exciting. And Joe, a player that looked fairly sharp was Danny Welbeck in that first half. I thought he looked very much up for it. Let's talk about the first goal then, Joe, because Joe, don't adjust your television sets. Don't adjust your phone or whatever it is you're watching this on. We scored from a set piece. Oh, mercy me. Joe, a short corner finds its way to Billy Gilmore. And I have to say, a beauty of a pass to the back post. Matoma heads it back across goal, leaping like a salmon out of the water. And Danny Welbeck is there to slot home. A really nice worked goal, Joe, and Danny Welbeck on the score sheet for the first game of pre-season.
It was beautiful. Who knew Matoma could jump like that? I mean, the guy has literally like got springs in his boots. It's crazy. Yeah, really well done from Billy. Amazing cross right into the danger zone. And then you're putting the ball exactly where it needs to be for Danny Welbeck to finish it off. I thought, based on last season, Danny Welbeck was finished, no? Our fans were writing him off, saying he's not good enough anymore.
They've been saying that for years.
I know. But here he is, banging in goals still. I get his pre-season, but scoring against Chelsea again. He loves a goal against Chelsea. And I love a Danny Welbeck goal as well. So long may that continue. And here we are talking about all these attacking options that we've got. Whereas 2 years ago, you would have laughed. You would have laughed your head off if we said we would have had Ferguson, Undav, Welbeck, Yao Pedro, Enciso, Matoma, March already in firing. It's crazy. And as Aaron said, it's unbelievably exciting. So, yeah, unbelievably well-worked goal. And if we're going to score set pieces this season, then what did we score last season? 72 goals? We're reaching that 100 mark.
Some straight facts there from Joseph. You're right, Joe. I think a couple of seasons ago, we were crying out for depth in the attacking areas. But many things have changed. And Dagan, we're quite in the polar opposite now, in that we're almost crying out for defensive cover. You're right. It is an opportunity for us to, look at that. Oh, no. Where's Aaron gone? Back to what I was saying, Dagan. We're lacking the defensive cover at the moment. I think that was really clear, as I've already alluded to, playing two midfielders in the fullback position. And I think that was quite evident for the first Chelsea goal, especially. You know, a bit sixes and sevens at the back. Webster got done on the inside, I think it was. Then young Jack Hinchelwood tried to come across the ball. I think it either hit Hinchelwood or it hit Van Hecker, and it fell very fortuitously to the Chelsea player who had a relatively easy job of slotting it past Jason Steele. For me, that goal doesn't happen with Lewis Dunk at the back, personally. And I think it shows the levels of, sort of like where we're at the moment in terms of our defence. So, Dagan, I know that you're very kind of keen to get another right back in, but do you think that with the imminent signing, of Igor, that will just boost those defensive numbers to a more favourable level?
Well, first I'll say, yeah, I'm optimistic about Igor and what he can contribute. I think he's late moving in his career to the centre back role. I think he played out wide at left back and even left mid a good bit when he was younger, and so I think he's still mastering the center back role, but he's 25, and I think he's certainly plenty physically strong, but he's not Colwell in the air, from what I understand. I think he's going to be solid. I think that's a place where he's going to have to grow. I think we'll see, the rotation of center backs, and I think he'll give us the cover for the Stupinan that many have been calling out for. In this game, and with that particular goal, when I watched it, I didn't notice this in person, but I noticed it when I watched it back, and I don't want to call it the wrong person, whether it was Gilmore or Dahoud or both, but I was watching and there was an opportunity for them to drop a little bit deeper into the edge of the box and pick up the open man. And they stopped just short of that. It wasn't they couldn't get there. They just instinctively didn't get there. And I thought to myself, if that was Caicedo, he'd have swiped that ball when that pass was made, because A, he would have seen it coming, and B, he wouldn't have stopped running. And it's just different, right? And I think, you know, he is that destroyer, that breaker up of plays. And I'm glad to hear Deserby talk about, if we lose Caicedo, we have to have someone to replace him. We have to bring in someone of his quality to replace him. None of that may not mean someone of his exact quality today, but at least someone who can reach his quality, you know, over the course of the season or then the course of a year or 2 years. But I think that's the real struggle. And we were talking earlier, and that's one of my worries about this saga dragging on, is do we have enough time to find such a player? And I hope you've been working the back channels and have someone at the ready, so that if that deal does go, we can sort of snap into action. But yeah, I think our defensive depth is fine. And that's where you started with the question. But it's the coverage in front of them that I worry about a little bit more, and cleaning up the messes when invariably, you know, the box will get flooded and, you know, defenders will have to steer the ball away from the primary, you know, possessor of the ball. But can we pick up everybody else that's filling in? Because in Chelsea, in the way they're playing right now, looks a lot more like the way we play. A lot of movement, a lot of playing through the wings and then filling in, you know, sort of sending a lot of guys to the middle. That was apparent. I was like, whoa, there are a lot of bodies coming into the box, and we were having trouble finding all those bodies. And I think that's part of why the ball got pinged around the way it did several times later in the game, because there were a lot of chances they had that didn't turn into goals. And again, we had a lot of guys playing defense in the second half that were not defenders, and we only had 10 men out there. So it's hard to get too up in arms over those things. But I do think we saw inexperience from Van Hekke. We saw, you know, Samuel's out of position. We saw a lot of things to sort of strike fear into our hearts a little bit, but we didn't have Dunk. We didn't have a Stupinon. We didn't have Caicedo. You take those three out of any defense and you're hard pressed. That was like a filibuster. Sorry, guys.
The Van Hekke point, Dagan, I don't think it was, you know, lack of experience. I think that's just more immaturity, really. Like, they're two really stupid tackles. Like, there is no need for those tackles. Neither of them. And that concerns me. That's been part of his game for years. At Blackburn, he'd done numerous things like that. You know, yeah, he may have pocketed Haaland, but I'm still not convinced of him. Personally, I'm not convinced. And yes, it's only pre-season, but if you're doing that in pre-season, yeah, you know, fine, get him out of the way now. But then what's he going to do in a league game? You know, and that could be the potential, you know, 3 points or no point situation. If we had 11 men on that pitch, you would have won on Saturday, in my opinion. Because the goals after that were not defensive mistakes, it's a bit harsh, but defensive awareness is what I'll call that, where you're just putting players in just to fill gaps. And not the players' fault. Christ, not the players' fault. It's no one's fault. It's just the way how it panned out. But yeah, for me, it was stupidity more than anything with Van Hekke.
Yeah, knowing he's on a yellow card as well, it's just so frustrating. Adam Webster had been brought off, 10 minutes before that? You know, you've only got Joel Veltman as the other recognised defender. And Van Hekke gets sent off. I mean, I know it was like a big hyped, well-hyped friendly, but it was a friendly all the same. Getting a red card in a friendly is quite unheard of. You'd normally, like, the ref would normally have a word with, like, the manager and be like, you need to get him off. So to get a red card was, I wouldn't say it's a surprising, because it was a really stupid tackle. And it, as you say, Aaron, it put us in a position where we had one defender on the pitch in Joel Veltman, and we had to play, Adingra as a right back. Who else was in there? Was Pascal Gross at centre back at that point? And then there was I can't remember the young lad's name.
Samuels at left back, and then Gross centre half.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea fans thinking they scored beating a world class Brighton team. Yeah, okay, cool. Crack on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was it's not a true reflection. I was actually quite surprised we didn't see Ed Turns. I wasn't on the bench, but he had a good season at Leyton Orient. I know that's obviously League Two level. He had a good half season there. Thought he might get a look in. Obviously, that didn't happen. It wasn't part of the case. But with the defensive depth that we've got at the moment, Hopefully that we'll see him against Brentford, but we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it really, I think Phil says here, I honestly didn't think going down to 10 men affected the resolve of the team. Very much agree. Several times I had to remind myself we were down to 10 men. We were still very effective at getting the ball forward. And that's very true, Joe. I mean, I'm kind of glossing over the Chelsea goals here because, as Aaron says, they were up against Joel Veltman, who's the only out-and-out defender. The others around him aren't going to have that defensive awareness, that sort of, I need to hold my position, I need to move forward, I need to track that runner, blah, blah, blah. They don't have that. So I'm not going to sort of get too upset about the fact that we conceded four goals. I'm not going to get too upset about the fact that, you know, Big Bart, you know, let three past him, because there is a context there that we can't just ignore. But what we can say, Joe, is even when we were down to 10 men, you know, we were electric going forward. Let's talk, Joe, about the link-up play we saw between Dennis Undav and João Pedro, because João Pedro has got everyone talking because he is looking, as Aaron has already said, electric. But I liked some of the link-up play him and Undav were doing up top.
Do you know what excites me more about that? And it's not necessarily to do with that particular link-up. But if he can link up that well with Dennis Undav, there's no disrespect to Dennis because I love him. Imagine that link up with Ferguson. Would be electric. It would be scary, but not for us. Not for us. And yeah, I really liked the fact that Dennis was a part of that. And it shows that there is that quality within Dennis Undav as well. A lot of fans were writing him off towards the end of the season. But what did he score in those last few months? 6 goals? 5 goals? The boy knows where the net is. He knows where the net is. And he scored again on Saturday, whenever it was. Was it 2 days ago now? I've lost complete track of time. And yeah, if we can get those cups between João Pedro and Undav, João Pedro and Enciso, João Pedro and whoever plays in these positions, then we're going to be scoring bags next this season. And it's going to be super, super exciting. And you know, we could talk about Adingra as well, who looked electric on the right hand side. Not really his natural position, has played there a few times, but more natural on the left. And you're trying to fill in or get these players to play some minutes because we've got so many. But I think that's only a good thing. I think Kyle said Danny Welbeck's gonna have to be fully on his game to keep his position because there's so many people ready and waiting in the wings to just take his place. So it's only a good thing.
Yeah, let's talk about this strength up top then. Let's break it down into actual numbers then, shall we? So on the wings, you've got Matoma and Solly March as your sort of your given wingers. João Pedro can play out there and Enciso can play out there. Buonanotte can play out there to a certain degree. I think we can all agree that he is a better 10, but he can and has played out there. You've got Welbeck, who can play wide left. Even Pascal Gross can play as like a sort of inside right-sided player. So we've got a lot of depth in the wings. And then up top, we sort of set up with a 4-2-3-1, but that one behind the striker often kind of makes it into a 4-2-4 quite often. And in that 10 role, you've got Lallana, you've got Pascal Gross, you've got João Pedro, you've got Enciso, you've got Undav, who can play in that 10 role. You've got, and then up top, you've got Welbeck, you've got Ferguson, João Pedro, Undav. You know, so we've got so much strength up top. And just saying all those names there, and I've missed Adingra. And all the time he's still with us, we've also got Sarmiento as well. So there's a lot of strength that we have in those positions. And it makes me very excited. I mean, Dagan, what did you make of João Pedro when he came on? That, I mean, we've got to talk about his penalty because Alexis McAllister leaving made a lot of fans question who's going to take our penalties. But it was a well-struck penalty from João Pedro. He won the penalty himself. You were there. What was it like in the flesh?
It was right in front of me. He gets downhill quickly, and he turns on a dime, right? I mean, he's got speed, agility, ball skill, And the thing that to me set him way apart is he has vision. And I love Enciso, but Enciso had the exact same pass to Undav for an easy tap in and missed him earlier. Undav was left with his hands out like this, where Adingra crossed the ball and Enciso, it landed at his feet in a little bit of a tougher spot, but essentially from the same spot where Pedro made that pass. And Enciso tried to score, right? And Undav was just like, dude, I'm right here. Because Undav does what he does, which is he moves so well without the ball. Undav with the ball at his feet, he can make a move, but he's not going to beat you, you know, with the ball at his feet. But he draws defenders, and when defenders are drawn, he finds open space incredibly, incredibly well. He is who he is, right? I mean, that's, I think we see his limitations as he's not going to take the ball and beat the defense. But he does a lot of good things for us. And I think he's become a useful player. And if Pedro is a guy who can see when it's his turn to take the shot and see when it's his turn to lay it off for another clinical finisher, he's going to just be dynamite. Because I had a younger guy and his dad who are City fans sitting next to me. But his dad brought his son, who was like college age, because Brighton has become his second favorite team. And I know I've been saying, we're going to be a lot of people's second favorite team. And they were deciding because of the way we play. And he was just blown away by Joao Pedro. He was like, this guy's incredible. He was really, really fun to watch. And he's going to be a lot of people's favorite player this season. Because I don't think it was, oh, it's a friendly, or he's the real deal. Watford fans have been chiming in the last couple of days. You saw it already. But for me, the assist was sort of the thing that put it to the next level. But yeah, really, really exciting. Really, really fun. There are a lot of options. And Welbeck, to credit him, I know I've been one who's sort of not giving Welbeck all the love. I think he's better in the second half than the first. He did play really, really well. He looked fresh. His legs looked fresh, which an off-season arrest will do that.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. So the game ended 4-3. As we say, preseason friendly. We ended the game with 10 men. We ended the game with one defender on the pitch. We saw a lot of rotation. Aaron, was there any other performances that you were either surprised in a positive way for, or that you were a bit disappointed with?
I think Gilmore played very, very well. And that is, I think, kudos to him. And I've been saying this even towards the end of last season. He looked really good when he played. Really good. And he should now play with confidence that I don't think he had towards sort of December, January time when he wasn't playing. You could just, when he came on for like little cameos, he didn't have that confidence in him. I mean, De Zerbi's even said before, like, he should be playing more games, but who the hell am I going to drop? Like, who am I going to drop? Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't drop even Mikasa, Caicedo, Gross, etc., because they're playing so well. This could be his year. This could generally be his year. If we did lose Moises and Billy came into that role, I wouldn't be too disappointed, because he is a very, very good player. And he's proved that the last sort of 6 months or so, to me personally.
Yeah, no arguments here. I think it was that infamous Wolves game where he was just phenomenal. And he won the Albie for the coveted Albie, I should say, for performance of the season. It was phenomenal. It was really good to see him keeping the game ticking over as well as he did at the weekend as well. Joe, another player that I'm quite excited to see a bit more of, and we've seen him before, is Steven Alzate. Now, Dagan, you feel free to chime in here as well, because I know you did a bit of research, because you're a stats guy, you're a data guy. And some of the stats that you were coming up with, Dagan, Joe, suggested that Alzate is one of the more in keeping with the Caicedo profile of many of the other players across the European leagues. Do you think we'll see more of him in this preseason as almost to see if he is that ready-made replacement for Moises Caicedo?
Can I let Dagan take this one? I think he's well more versed than I am on this subject.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm immersing myself in the numbers as a way to learn the game. The statistical profile is similar. The physical profile a little bit less so. And I think in the flesh, he's not the same. I mean, a very limited experience yesterday, but I think we're fooling ourselves if we're going to think many guys are going to come in and be Moises Caicedo. There are a few guys I've seen on tape that look a little bit more the part, but the tape and what I saw in person did not show me that Alzate is that guy. Now, I only saw him for, 15 minutes before we were down a man. So hard to get a full sense. So I'll withhold judgment. But, you know, could he be an effective player? I think he could be. Do I think he's going to, you know, slot in and we won't think we're missing Moises Caicedo? I don't see that yet. But you're right. I mean, the numbers do support that he's a very similar player. Yeah.
And as Kyle has just put in the comments, that Caicedo is so unique. We'll struggle to replace him with a similar profile. I think you're right, Kyle. And I think, you know, as Dagan sort of alluded to, it's going to be very, very difficult to replace him. We can just hope that perhaps the longer this drags on, the more likely it is that he'll stay.
I personally think that, and I know I've had involvement in conversations of a Caicedo replacement, but I genuinely believe there is no Caicedo replacement. I don't think there's anyone better that we could get that does his job as well as he does. I've said on record many, many times, I think he's one of the best defensive midfielders in the world at the moment. And obviously people go, oh, he's only played 1.5 seasons. It's not much of a sample size. I don't care. I've seen him week in, week out. I know what that guy is capable of. And I've seen what he can do. And he is one of the very best at what he does. Do we replace that? I don't think we do. I don't think we can.
No, it will be next to impossible to replace it. It's almost like you'd be better off trying to work a new sort of strategy so you can have a midfield two of De Hood and, Gilmore or Gilmore and Alzate. You'd have to just sort of tweak it tactically. Alfie here saying he's Jude Bellingham level in my books. I can't lie. Yeah, it's
they are two very, very different types of players.
Yeah,
I get the comparison. Like, I get the ability wise, like comparison. I get that, but yeah, they're two very, very different types of players for me. I mean, Jude is just absolutely ridiculous for his age. It's disgusting how good he actually is. And I think, you know, Joe's right. I think, you know, if Caicedo may be hard to replace, Alzate is not the guy at all. I don't rate Alzate at all, in my opinion. I would cash in on him now, personally. I just don't think the hype is there. I don't get why the hype is there for him, personally. Every time I've seen him, he's been very, very bang average from when he's played in the Bryan shirt before. So, you know, yeah, shoot me if you wish comments, but that's my opinion on Alzate. Will that change? Probably not, because I'm stubborn as hell. I'm a stubborn old man, but, you know, I mean, I said that about Gross, and look what happened there. So,
I think with Stephen Alzate, I think a lot of it is born out of that performance against Chelsea in the last Potter full season, when I think, was it Bissouma? Bissouma wasn't available. Alzate stepped in and he was phenomenal. But one swallow doth not make a summer, my friends. Doth not.
Well, so,
so yeah, it's I'm interested to see more of Alzate. I am genuinely interested to see what he'll be like when he's not played at right wing back or left wing back. So I am genuinely interested to see what he can do in a De Zerbi ball midfield. But yeah, I think, and I like this comment from Jason, I might be off the mark, but we don't really need a Caicedo. We just need a really good player in that position. I mean, yeah, I mean, there is, again, there is scope for that sort of way of thought, because at the end of the day, as we say, we're probably not going to likely replace him with a like-for-like replacement. So as long as we have the quality in that midfield, we might be able to sort of adjust tactically to allow us, you know, to use defensive cover slightly differently. I don't know. But I'm not Roberto Di Zerbia. He knows much more about football than I do. So there you have it. Just a little bit, Joe. Not like a lot. I mean, just a little bit. I mean, I don't mean to brag, but I do teach PE twice a week. So, you know, I'll be the next big thing in the Premier League.
Fine.
Was a massive loss and income and new player. Yeah, Jason, 100%. We didn't know how we were going to replace Bissouma.
But to be fair, I went on a Newcastle podcast at the start of last season. And it's when we were just about to... Yeah, exactly, Aaron. We were just about to lose Bissouma. And they were saying, essentially, your season's over. What are you going to do? You're losing the stalwart in your midfield. Good luck. And I said, no, Moises Caicedo. He is going to be 5 times better than Yves Bissouma. His ceiling is 10 times higher than Yves Bissouma. And they laughed at me. And now we're talking about him leaving for almost £100 million. So, go figure.
The problem is with that is when... we've had this for the last 2-3 years. When, like I said, when Bissouma went, oh, your season's done. You know, White left, oh, you're going to struggle to replace him. Kukurea left, oh, you're going to struggle next year. McAllister, well, there's your best player in your team gone. Yeah, right. You know, it just, we get this every year. Every year, other clubs seem to underestimate us because we sell our best assets. Not our best players, our best assets at the right time to sell. And, you know, the only one that I didn't want to lose was Dan Byrne, for obvious reasons. But my sweet boy. But you look back in it and I think it's made us better losing those players. You know, it's we've used that money wisely. We've invested in it, invested in youth, you know, Enciso, Spat, the Argentinian Dave. You know, we look good. That's the thing is, no doubt, if we sell Caicedo, yeah, we'll have another 100 mil in the bank, but we'll go and probably buy some 17-year-old wonder kid from South America, and in 3 years' time, we'll be selling him for 100 mil. Like, whatever happens is we're going to be in a better position than we were last year, financially, and probably in terms of squad depth as well, we'll be in a better position. And it's what annoys me about other fan bases is where they just think they know the club better than the actual fans. It's sort of like, you know, when we support this club, we know what we can do. Ah, yeah, but you're only Little Old Brighton. Yeah, Little Old Brighton in Europe. What are you doing? You know?
Can you say that again? Little Old Brighton and where?
Sorry, we're in Europe, Joseph. We're in a European football competition.
Sorry, mate, didn't hear you the first time.
That's fine. So when we've got other fan bases saying, yeah, well, we've been in the Premier League longer than you, what have you done in your 12 years being in the Premier League, Palace?
Honestly, though, what does that even matter?
Exactly.
What does that even matter? The trophies you've won before, yeah, great, well done. You've won those trophies. You've got that to look back on. You've got those memories. I'm sorry, but we've also got our memories to look back on. We've risen up the football pyramid. So I know they're not major trophies, but we have won silverware. And right now, we are a better club than Chelsea. Right now, we are higher than Chelsea. Last season, we finished six more positions higher than Chelsea. So I don't get the historical comparison.
It's not even just Chelsea fans, though, Joe. It's Liverpool fans, it's Palace fans. The Palace fans just whine the hell out of me because they got nothing to chime about. Your one club man's fucked off to Turkey, mate. See you in a bit. Why are you coming to us for? You've been in the Premier League for 12 years and your highest position is 10th. Congratulations. Nice job. Well done. So I would happily get beaten twice a year by you lot and we finish in the Europa League every single season. Would not bother me. You know, they just don't like the fact we're bigger than them. You know, which we are. Because, funny enough, they were down at Crawley on Wednesday night while we were over in Philadelphia. Levels to this game, gentlemen. Levels to this game.
There are certain levels. I'm just going to come back to a comment that was made by Alfie, I think, about Kozlowski, who's been at Vitesse. And also, I'm going to bring also in the same passage of chat. Talk about Jakob Moda as well, which I think Phil also mentioned. So Jakob Moda is still somewhere doing something. His agent said that he was going to be training on grass at the end of the month, as in the end of July. So do you think, Joe, there's a realistic attempt, realistic sort of way that Jakob Moda could find himself, his way back into the team this season? Or do you think that's still too soon?
I think it's a rough one to speculate. And given the length of injury, I think he hasn't played for, 15 months, 16 months, something crazy like that. I might be wrong there, but it's been a long time. And it just doesn't seem to be getting better. Whenever we do hear that, oh, Jakob Moda could be ready for the end of the season, nowhere to be seen. Jakob Moda could be training on grass, nowhere to be seen. If he was that close, surely he would have travelled with the squad just so he can be in and around the players ready and waiting to hopefully be ready for October time, like match fit for October time. And obviously it takes a lot to build up from that after a big serious injury like what he's had. So I'm genuinely really concerned about Jakob Moda, about how he comes back, about whether he'll come back. Obviously, this is going off absolutely nothing at all, but it feels to me that there's more to it. That there's more going on behind the scenes. There's things that we're not being told about how bad this injury is. And I really fear for him. But I hope that I speculate incorrectly.
I think when you're coming back from such a serious knee injury and there keeps being niggles in the rehab, it would not surprise me if he does have to be like, you know, I physically can't do this. And then we won't see, if that's the case, and we won't see him for 2 years or another year. Because if you keep getting constantly knocked back and knocked back and knocked back, you know, one knock back is maybe a month or so behind, and then another knock back, there's a couple months. And then you've got to think of the time you've done all of that, get back and back to, you know, you're okay to train on grass now, you're okay to do ball work. Then you've got another couple of months on top of that to get back to any sort of match fit pace for just under-21s, under-23s game. And then you've got another couple of months on that after playing the under-23 games to get the way De Zerbi plays. Because it's not going to be an overnight thing for him. And yeah, he's probably watched it whilst being out. But watching it and playing it are very two different things. Like, I've learned that after studying my UEFA coaches courses I've been doing, is watching and playing are so different things. Like, he has to get, in the end, he'll have to get involved and try and not push himself to a certain level because he physically can't. And then De Zerbi goes, well, he's not the player I'm looking for. Then he gets sold, which is sad because he could have been a fantastic player for us. But is the likelihood of him actually coming back from this knee injury the same player? Very unlikely. Very unlikely. For me, it screams very similar to like Abu Diaby, Jack Wilshere sort of thing, where he has one big injury. Then it's all his little niggly injuries. Almost, that could have gone badly. All the niggling injuries that will lead up to longer time out. And then in the end, just not the player that we hoped it would be, which is a shame.
Yeah, it was funny, isn't it? Because I think we got Jakob Moda and I can't remember the fullback's name. He's just been on loan. Carbo. You know, Carbo seems to be out the door, which I found very strange considering we're crying out for a fullback. And Jakob Moda, unfortunately, injured. And then Kozlowski, his second full season long loan. So it's going to be interesting to see, because obviously they were bought in under previous managers. So a very strange one. In the comments here, Matthew Ryan has said about Max Ahrens from Norwich.
Yes,
please. A highly rated youngster. I know he was on Liverpool's radar when Norwich did get relegated. But no, I'm really surprised. I think I mentioned it in the group chat on Seagulls Worldwide. I'm really surprised no one snapped him up, because he's surely better than championship and still only, what, 22, 23?
Yeah, he's still young. He's still young. I think the problem is Norwich want a stupid amount of money for him. And I think, which I get, you know, he is a very, very good player. And I think people, because he's at Norwich, won't justify paying that amount of money. Which, you know, all right, fair enough. But he is worth it. And would he probably start as our starting right back? I mean, probably.
I think he would at the moment. Yeah,
at the moment.
I mean, Lamptey, I mean, I will die on this hill. Lamptey is not a right back. He's not. He's a right wing back.
I mean,
for me, that he has not the defensive. I spoke to this today, Hagen. Like, Purvis is really good at going forward and coming back, forward and back, forward and back. Whereas Lamptey is just forward. And he did show at right wing back. He can come back. But I don't know if it's since the injury he's afraid to run as much or as fast. But he just doesn't get back enough.
Well, with a hamstring injury, that's always going to be on your mind. You'll be always a little bit sceptical of going 100% speed. And you're right, at right wing back, he was good at going forward and the defensive part of the game. But then you look at, I'm definitely not comparing it to him because I think he can defend better than this person I'm about to say. But you look at Trent, he's fantastic going forward, woeful defensively. And in modern day football, defending is such a very, very dying art, really. It is, you don't get the Maldinis, you don't get the you don't get the Nestors, you don't get Ferdinands, etc., etc., etc. You get the ball playing centre halves. You get, you know, in not a horrible way. You get the really rapid centre halves who can cover two positions. As in, if your right back's gone forward, you know that centre half can get over there so quick, which is something that we've always been. Struggled with, I think it's the wrong word, because our pace at the back isn't great, as we know, but it's definitely not causing us any problems compared to what it used to. And it's just the way the game's evolving. And I think Aaron's is very defensively, it's very opposite to Lamptey from what I've seen. He's fantastic defensively and he's okay going forward. He's not great and he's not horrendous, he's just okay going forward. And I think that's what may put a lot of people off, potentially. I mean, he can whip a cross in, don't get me wrong, from what I've seen him, because I had a bit of a soft spot for Norwich anyway, because I was a mascot when I was a kid, Brighton, Norwich away, and I've always liked Norwich, I don't know why. And he's a fantastic young English right-back, and if we had to pay the money, which I know they're asking, like, stupid money, like 35 mil around that era, then maybe there is better out there, maybe, for that value. But if it was maybe 15 to 25, then yeah, take a punt on him. What 25 mil in this day and age is nothing. And I think that says a lot. And for us to sit here saying, oh yeah, 25 mil is nothing nowadays, when, you know...
It's a far cry from getting Gary Hart for, what, £1,000 and a bundle of tracksuits?
Or getting Kazim Richards as a freaking prize.
Coca-Cola kid.
Yeah, good old Coca-Cola kid.
Yeah, man.
Hard memories.
Fun times. It has been a wonderful evening talking football, and it's been wonderful getting the experiences of Dagan. Before we go, Dagan, and before we wrap up the podcast, I would just like to... get your final thoughts about your experience. You've talked about it, you know, from a very sort of like, yeah, I went to watch the game and it was cool and this happened. But like from an emotional point of view, what was it like to watch the club that you've supported this season? You've come on this journey with us. You've been a huge part of the podcast, of the community that we've got. So, you know, what did it mean to you?
Well, Brett, I ended up feeling like I didn't have enough time. Like I was visiting with people and trying to get to know some of the people that I've gotten to know online or exchanged, you know, words with online, you know, positively, warmly. And I feel like there was not enough time to do all that because my window for the game was so short. I stayed to the evening and then drove back to get home and arrived home at, you know, 6:30 in the morning. So I pulled a full 24-hour shift to make the game happen. So I'm really eager to go to Atlanta and have the full experience of spending more time with the people and getting to know the people. And it was really fun. The experience was not what I thought, because the Brighton supporter section was half filled with Chelsea fans. The stadium was probably 12 to 1 Chelsea, you know, to Brighton. And then obviously a few just, you know, people observing sprinkled in. What really impacted me was thinking about what it must be like for those who go to every game and see the same faces and are surrounded in many cases by the same, you know, season ticket holders or regular attendees, and the not just a season's worth of games, but a lifetime worth of games like you guys have talked about. And it was striking to me just talking with folks after the game that I didn't sit with, right? The experience of watching it in person and the sort of rise and fall and that like hopeful moment of like, oh, we got two back. Like we can tie this thing up. And like the just experiencing that in person and like, oh my gosh, this would be the most insane thing, down 10 to come back and tie it. And this is a friendly where there are no stakes. And again, imagining the rise and fall of the people whose lives are so impacted by this club and have been for so long. Like it, again, humbling is the thing that comes to mind, but it's also like, man, for anyone who's listening, who's one of those people who gets to go, I can't help but say, as an American sports fan, and we have plenty of sports and plenty of teams, we don't have anything close. We don't have anything close to the relationship that it seems many fans have with their club and with many Brighton fans have with Brighton. And the fact that its, you know, very existence was brought into question so close to being erased from the footballing world, I can only imagine the power and all the emotion that goes with the triumph of every success that we have now, and why people say, you know, to these Chelsea fans, like, you just don't get it. Like, you can't possibly get it. You can't get what we appreciate and love about this team. And again, why I'm so happy to be a part of it and honored to be a part of it, because it isn't fake. It is something real and powerful. And I appreciate you, Tom, you know, saying to me this weekend, no, you're a part of it now. Because it, you know, I don't feel like I deserve it as much as you all do. I'm happy I picked right. Right. I picked right. I picked the right club, for me, certainly. And I've just been thrilled to be a part of it. And that, again, I can't wait to get to Atlanta and hand out a lot more stickers. I didn't hand out as many stickers as I would like. So if you're a listener and you're in Atlanta, come see me. I have that little sticker that's in the center of the screen, eager to pass those out to people who already like us and help find some more people who love us. But just an honor and a privilege. I pinned up the tour, USA tour 23.
So awesome. Nice. Thank you for sharing that, Dagan. I mean,
Tom, I've been requested to give a twirl of the shirt. There you go. I have been Joe. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to say, Dagan, you've absolutely nailed it, mate. As Rich has just said in the comments, you know, there's no hierarchy in this fan base. You know, a lot of us, we support our local team, but, you know, for a lot of us, it's all about, we never imagined that people stateside would even be remotely interested in us. So we openly accept you with open arms. And this is your podcast. This is your platform. And we are so, so grateful for you to be on this podcast and in our community. And we know that you're going to rep the Albion Obsessed crew and Brighton and Hove Albion well in Atlanta, because the US tour does not stop yet. We've still got another, two games to play. So this preseason is not over. We're going to be keeping you guys in touch. We're going to be giving you our thoughts and our feelings as we continue this amazing journey, not only just in the United States, but across our first season in Europe. This is going to be one hell of a roller coaster for us Albion fans, and we are so glad that you guys are going to be joining us on that journey. So that just leaves me to say thank you to Joe, Dagan and Aaron for joining me this evening. Thank you to you listeners who have joined in on the live stream and put your comments down below. You guys are awesome and we love you. Even you, Pranesh, I think you're just a secret Brighton fan, and that's okay, brother. That's okay. You can join us on this roller coaster. Well, there's no gatekeeping here, brother. In the meantime, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe if you are watching this on YouTube. And if you're watching it back on YouTube, leave us a comment down below. What did you think of the game against Chelsea? Where do you think the Brighton need to strengthen this summer? And what did you make of Jean-Paul Van Hecker's mad challenge? But more importantly, what did you make of João Pedro? Ooh, fun times. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be. Up the Albion. We'll see you next time. Take care.